live online. Finally, the Gridley City Council met earlier today. The council received an update about the recruitment process for the city administrator. The previous city administrator resigned in October after a drunk driving arrest while using a city vehicle. Looking forward, there are no regularly scheduled meetings for most boards, councils, and commissions until the new year. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Members First Credit Union, created by the community for the community. Members First is a member-owned, not-for-profit financial institution providing checking, savings, loans, and credit cards to residents of Butte, Glen, Shasta, and Tehama counties. For more information, visit m1cu.org. Thanks to Robin Engel and Tasha Levinson for their contributions to this edition of the Butte Report. Music in this edition by bensounds.com. Remember that the most important aspect of democracy is an informed citizenry. Tune in again next week and stay informed about what your government is doing. And if you have a tip, send an email to sue@kzfr.org. Stay tuned for the Chico News and Review on the radio with Jason Cassidy. Jason will look back on the biggest stories from 2020. And oh, what a year 2020 has been.
It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey there, Butte County. Jason Cassidy here, interim editor of the Chico News and Review. Thanks so much for tuning in again to this new weekly program, which airs every Thursday, 5:30 p.m., right after the Butte Report with Sue Hildebrand, here on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. As those who've already tuned in know, this show is a radio version of the print Chico News and Review, the new issue of which hit the racks last Thursday and is still available all over Butte County. For now, the print paper is monthly, but you can find more Chico News and Review stories online, along with our community calendar and county and state COVID updates, as well as a link to sign up to the paper's weekly email newsletter, all at chico.newsreview.com. And the Chico News and Review show will be taking the next two holiday weeks off, so since this will be the final show of 2020, we're taking a look back at this tumultuous, stressful year with the CNNR writers who reported on it. I asked three of my editorial colleagues to choose the story or series that they worked on that meant the most to them this year and asked them a few questions about their subject and their experience covering it.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must
That was Lisa Johnson, a sociology professor at Chico State, speaking to a crowd of several hundred at the City Plaza during a Juneteenth gathering this past June. The event was one of many demonstrations to take place in downtown Chico in response to the police killing of George Floyd on May 25th and Writer Ken Smith was on the ground for most of the protests, covering it for the CNR in multiple reports and contributing to a moving online gallery of images. He joins us now to talk about the experience. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Jason.
We're talking on Zoom today. That's the reality of COVID holiday radio shows. My first question, though, regarding your reporting is, what was it like at the local demonstrations, and what's your general impression of how our community responded to this call for racial justice and police reform?
Well, honestly, the response was amazing. I think in roughly 10 years of covering protests for the CNR, and, you know, it's just a people really showed up. There were some of the largest gatherings that I've seen, with probably the exception of the first Women's March.
Sure.
And just like such a feeling there. There was a lot of them were kind of, you know, unplanned or thrown together. It was unclear every day whether there would be a protest. But sure enough, there were protests every day for over a week. And it was just, you could really tell that people were moved to be there. And especially the amount of young people and people of color, which is, you know, not something that we've seen always in the past in Chico activism.
Oh, for sure. The Floyd murder, of course, you know, it strikes a chord for everyone. But locally, Butte County has its own history of killings at the hands of law enforcement. What's the local history that's at play here?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually, tying directly to the Black Lives Matter movement, we have an instance of a 25-year-old mentally ill black man, Desmond Phillips, who was killed a couple of years ago. But also, I mean, really, you know, the battle for police reform and responses to police brutality kind of benefit everybody. And when we look at our own community, yeah, we have had an inordinate amount of officer-involved shootings for a community of our size. The demographics here basically dictate that it's a different type of person. But, I mean, it's, you know, not all people of color like it would be.
Sure.
Communities. But on the other hand, I mean, if you look at most of the victims, they are still marginalized communities or from marginalized populations, particularly the mentally ill. Overwhelming amount of people involved in these fatal encounters suffered from mental illness. And recent history, even since the whole, you know, Floyd killing and the reactions it sparked everywhere, we've even had another killing here in Chico.
That's right.
Stephen Best, who was a homeless man. And obviously from, you know, all the reporting so far, going through a severe mental break, you know, there's definitely mental illness at play there. So, yeah, we definitely have a history of these things need to be addressed here.
Have the protests made a difference? Have there been any kind of responses that have been ongoing afterwards?
Yeah, I believe it has made a difference, a lot in awareness and involvement. You see a lot of people still doing the work out there who were moved to get involved by, you know, that kind of spate of protests and rallies there. Locally, we have things like the mayor's committee on the ad hoc committee on policing, which was kind of a half-assed attempt, I think. And ultimately, you know, I'm not sure how much good it did, because it kind of was from the perspective of Chico police kind of telling everybody what they did and how great they do it, basically. But it did, you know, spark a lot of dialogue about people understanding what was wrong with that approach and calling for a different approach. It's really, you know, given some recognition to, we have locally the Justice for Desmond movement. We have Concerned Citizens for Justice, who are both groups doing great work out there. And I think their efforts are somewhat redoubled in the past year.
That's great. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being on the streets, taking great photos, and reporting on the good work and all the, you know, the turmoil that our community and the pain that our community is going through, and sharing with the rest of the country.
Thank you very much. It was an honor to do so, and it felt amazing to be out there on the streets and sharing that with everybody. I know it was a scary time for a lot of people, and I'm glad that we were able to help and report here in our community on it.
All right, thanks, man. Take care.
You too.
For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM. And this evening, we're looking back at 2020 with our CNNR writers who are discussing their personal top stories of the year. All right, after the campfire destroyed Paradise and Concow, and most of the media outlets had left Butte County, the CNNR stayed with the story, following up on the recovery of the people who lost everything. Writer Asia Sharaga has written some of the more impactful pieces on the ongoing aftermath, and has continued to do so in 2020, writing three cover features this year. Visions for Paradise on November 12th was about the rebuilding efforts on the ridge. Sifting Through the Recovery on September 3rd is about the current plight of Concow, the often forgotten community that was mostly destroyed in the fire as well. And the very moving Stuck in Survival Mode on March 4th about the stalled recovery process. She joins us now, and hey, Asia.
Hi.
After a big disaster like the campfire, you know, it's natural for those who weren't dramatically impacted to move on. But for so many, the disaster continues. What is the story you found as you continued to cover the local recovery?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's like, where do you begin, right? So we're a poor county, Butte County is. And in my reporting, you know, I just kept meeting people in these various stages of like survival mode. Like maybe they had a car they were sleeping in and that was their shelter, right? And they're still trying to figure out, you know, how to get through their day and move forward when the basic needs aren't met. You know, you still had, I went up to the Magalia Community Church often, and there were people up there. I forget what their latest, I don't know what their latest figures are, but they regular, like hundreds of people coming up, getting food. So, it was just people in tents, RVs, cars, essentially this theme of where we have amazing organizations providing relief, but the recovery is elusive for so many people. And then of course that extends to the trauma as well, you know,
Sure.
A lot of people can't even begin to process that when they're still in this survival mode. Especially people, and the people who are especially impacted are those who are had no insurance, or were underinsured at the time of the fire. And so, you know, here we are 2 years later. And while there have been great strides that have been made, especially when you look at the town of Paradise and the number of homes that have been built, sure. I think the most recent figure was over 500. And when you look at other communities that have suffered catastrophic wildfire, although hard to think of any that's been that was as bad as the campfire, that's an incredible amount to have done in 2 years, but it's still not a fraction of, you know, what's needed. And so while we have this recovery and people are moving forward, there's still such a tremendous need that's just hard to kind of address, and a big gap for renters and other folks.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that in one of your stories, relief versus recovery, and that there is a lot of relief. There's been a lot of people who've stepped up, and a lot of organizations have stepped up. But affordable housing is elusive. That seems to be a big thread running through everything.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at how much we already had a housing crisis before the fire, and when you look at the thousands and thousands of housing units that were destroyed, homes and apartments. I mean, it's like, how do you even begin to make up for that? You know, something that is supposed to help with that I cover in my most recent story that talks about the vision for the future of paradise is the fact that there is a federal assistance coming. And it's kind of just, everyone's been kind of in this holding pattern, like waiting for this assistance that's supposed to help with affordable housing, things like rentals. So, you know, the hope there obviously is that that will help provide some more relief and housing, I mean, housing units. But again, it takes time. It takes time to rebuild.
Tons of money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and in the meantime, one of the things that we talked about, or I've talked about in my stories, is that people move on, even if they don't want to. They have to move elsewhere. Yeah. Or people who, you know, this has been their home forever are forced to go elsewhere. And a lot of people, they don't have the means to. So they end up in these, you know, transitional, temporary living situations that aren't so temporary, and they're dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that has an impact on their physical and emotional health. And then on top of all of that is the COVID-19 pandemic.
Oh my gosh.
So you take a community that is desperate to reconnect and remind itself that there are people who are still there, that there is still a community, and you put them in a position where they can't do that in the same manner. And, you know, I interviewed someone in Concow, Hap Hathaway, and he had multiple events planned for this year that had to be canceled. And when you think about how big of an impact that can make on that can have on a community that has been fragmented and split up and gone through so much trauma, it's just like hit after hit after hit for these communities have already been like through so much.
Like a lot of Butte County residents, your life is impacted by a campfire as well. You had refugees staying with you for an extended period, and you've covered it. You've watched people's trauma unfold. Has following the stories and meeting these people impacted your own recovery?
Yeah, I think actually, oh my gosh. So, you know, as you know, we had an issue where we all got to write essays about how witnessing has this and covering this has impacted us. And I didn't really understand until a whole year later the impacts for me. And I didn't understand that secondary trauma is a thing.
Sure.
That you can be traumatized and experience, you know, that pain by experiencing something secondarily as a reporter, as a, you know, first responder. And so, you know, the way that unfolded for me, you know, was through performing. And ever since then, you know, I think like that's how I realized it. And I think that has helped me a lot, just being able to understand that I can say that I've had secondary trauma, and that, and that comes from the fact that I care so deeply about people.
Sure.
And I obviously care deeply about the truth and, you know, the value that journalism has, as an information conduit. But it's also, I mean, for me, I enjoy getting to know people. I enjoy, it's important to me to tell their stories. And when you keep hearing these devastating stories, is my personality, I hold on to that. And I wonder about these people. So in relation to that, you know, getting to report on some positive things about the recovery recently was really great. Because it was great for me to be able to share that with the community, and also great for me personally to know that there are people on the ridge who are doing well, and they are, they have been able to rebuild, or they're almost there, you know, because
yeah,
even for people who've had the means, it's been hard.
It is a reminder that the story continues.
Oh my gosh, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things in 2020 since COVID happened, here's my emotions. Here they are.
Sorry.
The thing that has been so important to me has been making sure that people don't forget about what happened in the campfire. And then of course we had the horrific North Complex and Bear fires, and more of our people died.
Yeah.
And I know that people are dying every day with COVID too, and it's just like, I know that there's this tendency for people to move on to the next disaster. especially like, you know, media, major media outlets.
Sure.
And it was so important to me that as we, you know, did our best to cover COVID amidst all the changes going on for us as a newspaper that have been, you know, hard for us, you know, they've been a struggle, yeah, like all local businesses. But amidst all of that, that we continue to remember that we have people on the ridge who need to be checked up on, stories that need to be told, and, you know, organizations that need to be watched, and to we need to know, like, are things being done that could be done? You know, are we staying on top of this? What are the missing pieces? You know, all those questions that you ask as a journalist. I think that has been, that was just so important to me.
Well, thanks, AJ. I appreciate it. This is, thank you for doing the work, and I know you'll keep doing it.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I couldn't do it without you and the rest of our team. So, yeah, thanks for talking with me about this stuff. It's always a really interesting experience getting to talk about your writing as a journalist.
Yeah, yeah, we should do more of it. The Chico News and Review Show is presented by the Chico News and Review newspaper, Butte County's source for news and arts for more than 40 years. Published and distributed monthly throughout the county and online at chico.newsreview.com. And sponsored by Sunseri Construction, a general contracting company with operations throughout California and northern Nevada. Founded in the early 1970s, Sunseri partners with mission-based nonprofits to provide affordable, special needs, and senior housing for vulnerable populations. Find Sunseri Construction online at sunsericonstruction.com. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM. And this evening, we're looking back at 2020 with our CNNR writers who are discussing their personal top stories of the year. It's hard to believe that in a year of devastating wildfires, a contentious presidential election, and worldwide police violence protests, that there could be anything else that is the big story of 2020. But the coronavirus pandemic has impacted everything and everyone. There are a lot of stories to tell from many sectors, and CNNR associate editor Evan Tuchinski has written many stories on COVID-19, focusing mainly on the pandemic's growth, its ongoing impact on the health of the community, and on the response of medical professionals and other local agencies. So a big part of the stories that you've been doing, you've covered it a couple of different ways, is how the hospital prepared for a swell that didn't come and then kind of did come and then kind of, it's kind of gone back and forth. What's your impression of how local medical professionals have prepared for this pandemic?
They first prepared by assuming that there was going to be a huge wave that would potentially overwhelm the hospital. So they followed the lead that was given to them by state and federal officials to reserve half of the hospital to accommodate COVID patients. And considering that there are nearly 400 beds, potentially a little bit higher, that are allowed at Enloe Hospital, that's about 200 bed capacity. And then Chico was granted, on behalf of Butte County, a field medical station, technically a federal medical station, FMS. But I tend to think of it as a field medical station, sure, because it really is a hospital that's kind of set out aside from the hospital to handle overflow. And that was done at Enloe's Rehabilitation Center. So that allowed for another 125 beds. That was here for a month in the spring. And when the wave didn't happen in the spring, as was anticipated by the models, that got shut down and totally taken away. National Guard came, took all of the beds and equipment and everything away. So this perfectly set up field hospital evaporated and was moved. We've had this surge at the beginning of December where we've had our two worst weeks in a row. Most recently hitting about 900 cases over the span of a week. And now they're having to go to that worst case scenario. They're hitting that point where they may reach that capacity and they may have to go to that scenario that they were planning for and were prepared for way back in the spring. And that has a trickle effect to other health professionals because they need to be similarly prepared for their private offices and other facilities to be just as overwhelmed with people coming in, not knowing if they necessarily have COVID or other conditions. So again, it's a situation that has grown serious simply because of these rise in cases.
And as you reported, the head of public health has said that, Danette York has said that if things follow the patterns that have happened before, you can expect after a big surge like this last couple of weeks in cases that there will be the follow-up surge in hospitalizations and deaths as well.
Because of the way this disease incubates, it's not a case of the quote-unquote flu, as people often erroneously compare, where you get a little 24-hour bug and then you're done. This disease takes anywhere from a few days to a couple weeks to incubate. That's why there's these 14-day quarantines, because you could still test positive 14 days later. So that can be the lag time. We can have these surges in the numbers of cases, the numbers of positive tests, before people can really get sick. And then when they really get sick, it can take some time before they get really sick. And unfortunately, some die.
In terms of people's response to things and their interpretations of what this all means, you mentioned some people likening it to the flu. You were the writer behind an editorial that we published on August 6th that talked about, you know, the misleading claims that are often out there on social media. You use the expression armchair epidemiology. What do you mean by that?
You need to have some degree of medical training before you start giving medical advice. And perhaps it's a little bit of a bias of mine because I'm married to a doctor, but it gets frustrating when social media posts pontificate about a disease that is really new and really complicated. They're not out there really making the call on something that could affect so many people's lives.
And this whole story is going to continue into the new year, of course, and I look forward to how you cover it, Evan.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate the opportunity to do so.
All right, take care. What's on the holiday calendar in Butte County? Actually, there's some cool stuff. Slow Theater just announced a socially distanced improv show. It's the last improv show of 2020. This time, the Slow Theater Players invite you online for a holiday party, complete with improv entertainment, of course. It's Friday, December 18th from 7 to 8 p.m., and you can find out information on how to join the live stream at facebook.com/slowtheater. And the Ulogs are back. They have one last show of the holiday season that they're doing online. This one's called Lago Vision 2. It's tonight at 8 p.m. on the band's YouTube page, but you can go to facebook.com/theulogs to get more info. It's the second of two concerts that were filmed in an empty Chico Women's Club last month, and you can revel virtually with live chat with the band as they live stream tonight. And you can go watch Lago Vision 1 as well on their YouTube channel. And even more Ulogs over at Chico Performances, the show that was filmed at Laxon Auditorium, is still available at chicoperformances.com. And you can also catch a couple more holiday live stream events. Manual Cinema's Christmas Carol. It's streaming live. It's a multidiscipline performance troupe in Chicago, and it'll be streaming live from their studio Friday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. You can find more info at chicoperformances.com. And while you're there, you can also get info on A Celtic Family Christmas at Home, showing Saturday, December 19th at 6 p.m. It's Canada's reigning couple of Celtic music, Natalie McMaster and Donnell Leahy, and they'll be playing a Christmas show from their home. And the Christmas Chaos out at Chico Theater Company is still going on. This is the last weekend, Friday and Saturday, 7:30, and 8 p.m. Christmas Chaos is a fast and frenetic comedy that takes you on a roller coaster ride through Charles Dickens' classic tale of Ebenezer Scrooge. Our intrepid band of hardy actors bravely attempt to present the entire story in only 10 minutes. It's like drive-in style, too. So you pull up, you buy your tickets online, you pull up, and enjoy the show in your car. Let's see here. Oh, and you go to chicotheatercompany.com for more information. And North State Symphony is putting on a holiday show, Beethoven 250, featuring highlights from Beethoven's most famous string quartets. It's brought to you on Christmas Eve with principal section leaders Terry Bond on violin, Leah Carl on viola, Carol Jacobson on cello. It'll also air, the virtual performance will also air on cable access, Comcast Channel 11.